Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. People around the globe drink up to 2 billion cups of coffee every day. That is 2 billion cups every day. That is a lot of coffee beans. But how many of us stop to think about where that special drink comes from and the labor of love that goes into producing it? 25 million coffee farmers around the world are fighting the climate crisis to save coffee. Small coffee farmers grow 80% of the world's coffee. We meet growers in Costa Rica and Tanzania in the documentary It's Bean Too Hot. In this clip, you will hear from coffee growers.
Climate change is happening. The rise in temperature can really stress the coffee plant. This can lead to dying of the plant itself.
In 30 years to come, coffee production might be very low due to some areas are becoming unfavorable for coffee growing.
In the last 35 years, the temperature in Monteverde went up 2 degrees Celsius. The number of dry days went up from 30 to 100 dry days a year. But it also rains more. We almost doubled the precipitation this time.
This is very stressful for plants. They are used to certain patterns, and the rate of change that is happening is faster than their capabilities of adaptation.
That is a clip from the documentary It's Bean Too Hot. The film also explores carbon neutral farming and how climate friendly agricultural practices are protecting biodiversity. Not only are these practices evolving, but coffee farming itself is moving from a male dominated field to one where women are filling crucial roles. And we will definitely talk about that on today's show. Joining us is Hedvika Miknova, a filmmaker and photographer from the Czech Republic. Hedvika Miknova is director of It's Bean Too Hot. Hi, Hedvika. Thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for making this important film.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. I should say you and your team, because I know a lot of people were involved in it. Why did you decide to take on this project to study coffee and the effects on climate change on the production of coffee and then the people producing coffee?
So I am a filmmaker and a photographer, but I worked as a barista for a couple of years. And through doing that, I actually developed this passion towards coffee and I became very interested in it. I started looking at what coffee I'm buying. I started grinding my own beans and becoming really getting into the taste of coffee. And then it was the summer before my final year of university, and I was trying to figure out what my final project should be. So I wanted to make a film for my degree, but I wasn't quite sure what the story is just yet. And I thought it would be amazing if I could combine it with my passion for coffee. But I also wanted to make something environmental or conservation based, because those are topics that I'm interested in. And then I found an article saying that coffee is actually threatened by climate change, and that one day we just might not have enough suitable area where we can grow it so we can use our daily cup of coffee. So from that moment, I just knew that that is the project I need to make. And the reason is very simple. I was already really interested in everything about coffee, but I still didn't know about the impact of climate change that it could have on it. So I thought there's probably millions of people like me who need to know this. So this is kind of how it all started. And I have to admit, like at the beginning of my film, it was mostly driven by the thought that one day we just might not have coffee. And as a coffee lover, I was shocked. But as I started my travels and I met the people on the way, it very quickly became more about the farmers who depend on coffee for their livelihoods and who might just might not be able to sustain themselves if we don't do anything right now. So I suppose that's a story.
Well, it's a great story. And it's amazing to think that there are about 1 billion coffee drinkers around the globe. And the average coffee drinker has 2 cups of coffee a day. So 2 billion cups, which is incredible. And then after watching the film, I was just thinking about how there are coffee shops all over the place. And yet when people walk into coffee shops, is this something people think about? Do they ask, well, where was this coffee grown? Some people might ask, is it organic or not? But that's probably where the conversation ends. What did you learn in your research about what people actually know about the coffee they're drinking?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. People love coffee. We drink it. Well, most of us, a lot of us drink it every day. But actually, I think it's 65% to 80% of coffee is drunk at home. And most of that is instant coffee. And instant coffee usually tends to not be the highest quality. And, you know, a lot of people just drink it for the energy boost and don't really pay that much attention to discovering where it was grown, how it might taste. There is luckily now quite an increase of interest, especially in young people like me, I suppose, about the flavor profiles and really going into these like specialty coffee shops, really being interested in what the coffee will taste like, buying single origin coffee, perhaps even taking interest in their certifications. And I'm certainly hoping that that will be on the rise and hoping that this film will also kind of inspire more people to think about where the coffee is from. And as you said, when you walk into a coffee shop, maybe ask the question of how it was grown. Was it grown sustainably?
What are certification practices these days? Because the other thing I noticed going to a local grocery store, I mean, there are at least 20 different brands of coffee that you can buy and various labeling. So can you also talk about that? Were you able to look into that?
Yeah, there is a lot of certifications, or there is quite a few. The ones that are mostly known, you have like organic, fair trade, Rainforest Alliance. And certifications are certainly a really good thing. For example, the fair trade, they ensure that the coffee grower gets the fair price. But the idea behind it is great, but I feel like it still isn't working as well as it should. The reality is that fair trade coffee asks the consumer to pay more for a coffee that essentially tastes the same. There's no difference in taste. You are just paying more to support the people. And unfortunately, that is not a price that a lot of people want to pay. So this leads the farmers to not be able to sell the coffee as fair trade, even though they do have the certification. So they sell a large part of it without it, just so it doesn't go to waste and they earn a little something. So yeah, it's a great idea, just like organic is. Organic is actually does influence the taste a lot, but I feel like we as consumers need to be interested in that more. And then if we do pay the bigger price for coffee, which is, you know, it's not a massive price, it's the price they deserve, then the farmers will have the funds to actually be able to adapt to climate change and continue growing coffee that we all love.
So let's just talk about some basic facts around coffee, given that 2 billion cups are people drink 2 billion cups every day. Where is coffee mostly grown?
So coffee comes from Africa. It comes from Ethiopia, where it used to be grown in the shade of trees as a wild species. But as coffee expanded, we cultivated these two bigger species, Arabica and Robusta coffee, which 70% of the coffee that we drink now is Arabica, and most of it is now actually grown in Brazil. I think the second biggest producer is Vietnam. So you see how it kind of really shifted from Africa. There's still quite a lot of coffee in Africa that's being grown, but it really boomed in countries like Brazil, Colombia. That's where you get most of your coffee shop coffee from.
And why? What explains the change?
I can't say I'm an expert in that. I think loads of it has to do with colonialism, right? But it just boomed kind of all over the coffee belt, this like central area where the conditions for growing coffee are good enough, because that's kind of what my film is dealing with. The conditions for growing coffee are very specific. Coffee Arabica doesn't like many variations in temperature. So it needs a very specific temperature and it needs a very specific amount of rain and sun per year. Otherwise, it just won't produce.
So let's talk about some of the facts that we learn in your film. In 30 years, the conditions to make coffee could be unsustainable. We also learned that climate change could reduce the global area suitable for coffee by about 50%. And the coffee growers you interviewed in Tanzania say that coffee needs a lot of rain, but it also needs a lot of dryness. So tell us what you learned about how coffee is being affected and will be affected by climate change.
Yeah, so as you said, there was this study that said in 2050, 50% of the land where we currently grow coffee might not be suitable. And you can kind of imagine it in a way that as the temperatures are rising, it's pushing the suitable areas to higher elevations. So that means the farms at lower elevations won't be able to grow anymore, but we might also get a few new regions that weren't suitable before. But there are some regions that we just won't be able to save now, of which farmers are, they're already abandoning them. But for a lot of them, there are still a lot of things that farmers can do. And that is kind of, I suppose, the point of the film, to kind of try and find the solutions that farmers can take to adapt. Because what I saw in Costa Rica and Tanzania were two very different coffee places, because Costa Rica, it's quite a rich country. It's way richer than Tanzania, and it definitely has like quite large coffee farms. And the farmers there also have, I suppose, more awareness of the sustainable practices of growing coffee. When I was in Tanzania, it was more like a coffee garden. It was more of a family thing, family business, a way just to keep them sustained. Farmers there, they didn't usually like to drink coffee. It was just a business for them. Mm. But especially there, it was really important for them to learn how they can protect it, because they weren't receiving enough training before.
Today, we're speaking with Hedvika Miknova, a filmmaker and photographer from the Czech Republic. She's the director of the documentary It's Been Too Hot. She traveled to Costa Rica and Tanzania to meet with coffee farmers who are fighting the climate crisis to save coffee. And it was also so important just to see the areas and then hear the farmers talk about how all of this is connected to biodiversity. So, for example, Guillermo Vargas, a coffee farmer in Costa Rica, said that the forest is important for wildlife, including birds, which eat many different insects on the coffee bushes. They're great pest controllers. The birds also nest on the coffee fields. He said that in some experiments, birds were removed from coffee fields and found that the impact of the bird beetle was 70% higher. So he was really just focusing on how this is all connected to biodiversity.
Yeah, so this is the principle of shade-grown coffee, essentially. And Guillermo's farm was a really good example of that, because he was very much trying to make the ecosystem just work together. It wasn't just a coffee farm where you spray a lot of pesticides and the coffee grows, you collect it, you sell it, and that's the end of the story. No, he had a forest, which was an important nesting site for birds. And this is basically the bird-friendly certification, which many farms now have, which means that the farm has enough forest for the birds to nest. And then the birds, like you said, also help the farmer with pest control, because they eat the insects on the coffee. So you see how that works amazingly together. But the Guillermo's farm, it wasn't just coffee and forest. It also had... He was also growing vegetables. He was also growing fruits. He had pigs and goats. And you could really see how that was just like a one big ecosystem. And whenever they did have visitors and tourists, I was there during COVID, unfortunately. But whenever they do tours, Guillermo then goes and he teaches everyone about how nature should work together.
He also pointed out that the old way of producing coffee has been very damaging, using pesticides. Not only has it affected the soil, but it's affected surrounding communities. And he just talked about the importance of taking care of the soil, the water, the forests. And the film is also so beautiful because he points out that the birds, the bees, and the butterflies like to feed more on the natural fields than the fields with the chemicals.
Yes, so it was a lot about organic farming as well, and this was actually Oldemar in a different coffee farm where his coffee farm was actually certified organic. So you could see how he was also growing trees to protect his coffee, but they were very focused on keeping that organic certification. So he was even saying that they decided to be organic because it's also this like gap in the market that it kind of gives them advantage over other farms, perhaps. And it worked for them, and they are still being very successful with their farm. So I suppose it's also setting an example for other farms as well.
Today, we're speaking with Hedvika Miknova, a filmmaker and photographer from the Czech Republic. She's the director of the documentary It's Been Too Hot. She traveled to Costa Rica and Tanzania to meet with coffee farmers who are fighting the climate crisis to save coffee. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. What else really stood out for you, Hedvika, when you spoke with the farmers? Let's say, for example, in Tanzania, about how climate change is affecting that part of the world and what farmers are doing to adapt.
There was this really amazing moment when we were in Tanzania, and all the farms there were really remote. So we traveled for about 2 hours, you know, into the mountains, into a community where they told us they might not have seen a Western person before. And then we got there and we went to this training of farmers. So the organization there that I worked with, they organized this training so that farmers are aware of the practices of adapting to climate change. And it was just very surreal to see this community of farmers who got together, you know, they sat them down in a shed, and they were discussing climate change. And I was just sitting there and I was thinking, you know, I never really thought about climate change from their point of view. And it was almost like heartbreaking to see that that is something they have to be dealing with. But luckily, they did have help.
Can you talk more about what they're facing exactly? Because you're so right. In many ways, unless you really look for it, a lot of people are disconnected to what's happening there around climate change.
Absolutely. And there was a lot of problems, I suppose, that farmers there were facing. And unlike Costa Rica, the problems weren't just environmental. There was a lot of social problems connected to climate change as well. For example, part of my film is dealing with women. And it's said that women are the ones who are most affected by climate change. But actually, women do most of the work on the farm, but they are rarely ever involved in decision making and handling money and actually being able to kind of treat coffee farming as a business. So now with climate change, it's even harder for women to do that, because they have to spend more time trying to find water, trying to find wood for making fire. So what the organization there was helping them with was actually making their life kind of easier in a way that they were donating water tanks so that the woman could spend more time actually in trainings and learning how to be an entrepreneur.
I loved this part of the film, and let's play a clip. This is from It's Been Too Hot. And in this clip, you will hear from Moyuma Hamis Moangu, an agronomy coordinator with the Hans Neumann Stiftung in Tanzania. And this is the group that works with coffee farmers on the ground.
Women is number one person who mostly been affected by the climate change effects. She's responsible for the family. With climate change, it becomes very difficult for a woman to get firewood in its long distance of walking to fetch water. Without fire and water, nothing will be done. I mean, no water, no life. We are empowering women to deal with the effect of climate change, to take over different responsibilities. Women are getting more time coming to the training. Once we train them on the alternatives, like rainwater harvest, like energy-saving stoves, we see more women involved in the coffee sector. I'm seeing myself as a role model to the other women. It's like, wow, if she can do agronomy, why should I not go for it?
That is a clip from It's Been Too Hot, a documentary focusing on how coffee farmers in Costa Rica and Tanzania are fighting the climate crisis to save coffee. And you just heard from Moyuma Hamis Moangu, agronomy coordinator with the Hans R. Newman Stiftung in Tanzania. And this was really an amazing part of the film, Hadvika. After we heard or we met Moyuma, we also met Tukapasia Bugali, a coffee farmer in Tanzania, who said that it was a patriarchal system where only men were involved in the cash crop. But because of opportunities, that has really changed. And she said, if you educate a woman, you will educate the whole community. And what is empowering women is the change in a mindset. Can you talk more about that?
So Tukapasia was this wonderful lady that we were so fortunate to find, because when we went to Tanzania, I knew that I wanted to make this story about women. But of course, the story is really hard to find there because it is still very much dominated by men. So I was very happy to find her, and she was a brilliant contributor. She used to be a pastor, and then her and her husband got into coffee farming. And with them, you could really see that they are working on the farm together. And I would almost even say she was the dominant person in the family, which was just so different from all the other families we've seen. And she was also kind of like, she was also a very big person in the community. Like all the other farmers there came to her for advice. And she was absolutely brilliant. And it's great to see that more women there were involved.
And as a result of that, the entire family is involved. Families, in many cases, can now afford to send their children to school. So for so many reasons, it is so important to ensure that the women are involved. Do you see that growing in Tanzania based on the research you did?
I would like to say that it's growing. I think that I can say that. It's still quite difficult because I think it's this sort of movement is very much at its beginning, but it's good to see that there are people committed to training women and committed to making them more empowered. So I really hope that it is growing, and then in a few years, we'll see much more of that.
Can you just give us a few other examples? It was just interesting to see people attending the trainings to learn more about how to, well, I'm not even sure what word we should use these days, adapt to climate change. A lot of people say we have to adapt, but we're so far beyond that. But what else is being taught in some of these community groups and these classes?
So in Tanzania, you can't really teach the farmers techniques that would be really expensive for them to do, because they need to be able to afford it. So luckily, HR Nest, the organization, they came up with a few techniques that kind of work for everyone. Although I should say there is like no one scenario that fits all. It was very individual to each farm. But for example, some farmers were building these like water trenches. So it was this like little hole they dug out around the coffee crops, so that in the dry season or in the wet season, the water would just sort of gather there and it wouldn't escape. So the plant would get enough of it. They were also practicing mulching quite a bit, like laying basically foliage over the ground so that the soil would still be healthy. And as I said before, it was really good to see how these practices actually worked. For example, there was one family that also grew bananas to shade their trees. And this kind of comes to the principle of shade grown coffee. But for that family, it also meant that they are able to get a second income, because coffee produces once a year. But bananas, they can harvest them weekly. So it was good for them to kind of keep coffee as a business by doing something else as well, which also protected the plant.
Today, we're speaking with Hadvika Miknova, a filmmaker and photographer from the Czech Republic. She is the director of It's Been Too Hot. This is a documentary about what is happening to coffee around the globe. Hadvika traveled to Costa Rica and Tanzania to interview coffee growers about how they are fighting the climate crisis to save coffee. There are 25 million coffee farmers around the world. Small coffee farmers grow 80% of the world's coffee. And coming up after a break, we will also also be joined by Enrique Carvajal Amrine, a coffee producer with the Santa Anita Farm in Costa Rica. It's the world's first farm to be certified as carbon neutral. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we are talking about coffee and how it is being affected by the climate crisis. Today's guest, Hedvika Miknova, is out with an important documentary, It's Bean Too Hot. She traveled to Costa Rica and Tanzania to talk to coffee growers to find out how they're dealing with the climate crisis. And we'd also like to welcome Enrique Carvajal Amrine to the show. Enrique is a coffee producer with the Santa Anita Farm in Costa Rica. It is the world's first farm to be certified as carbon neutral. Hi, Enrique. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hello, KALW. It's a real pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have you, and it was great to see your farm in the film and to learn more about the great work that you're all doing. First off, can you just tell us a little bit about Santa Anita in Costa Rica and where you are right now, what the area is like?
Yeah, for sure. Well, first of all, shout out to Hedvika. It's so nice to hear from her. Thank you so very much again for showcasing our farm in your wonderful film. She did a great job. This topic is of utmost importance right now. Right now I'm in the farm, actually, like every day. We have actually three farms. We have two small farms in the Central Valley of Costa Rica. And then we have a larger farm in what it's called the West Valley in Costa Rica, which is like 15-minute drive westwards from the capital city of San Jose. And that's where I'm at. I'm surrounded by lush trees, forests, very nice breeze, very overcast though for the time of the month. It's rarely overcast. We just finished the 2021-2022 crop, and we are in the midst of positioning our coffees in the world market, selling, etc. So it's a very hectic time, but beautiful as always. Yeah.
How long have you been in this industry?
Well, I've been for since 2014, so that's like 8 years. But I'm part of a family. I'm the fifth generation of coffee growers. So my family dates back to the year 1826. That's where our family history begins. My great-great-grandfather he was not a grower, actually. He was just a transporter of coffee parchment from the Central Valley of Costa Rica to the port in the Pacific. And then subsequently, my great-grandfather was the first one that actually purchased land, and began producing coffee in Costa Rica's Central Valley in the province of Heredia, which is a really nice mountainous province. He became a really important coffee grower by the end of the 19th century. Actually, he became the largest grower in Costa Rica. Till this day, he's still the largest coffee grower Costa Rica has ever seen. He was nicknamed the King of Coffee in the European markets because he was pioneering lots of very sustainable practices oriented to social justice. And we carry on the beacon with a lot of honor and also with lots of responsibility.
Wow, incredible history. How is the climate crisis affecting your part of Costa Rica and coffee growing there?
Well, very, very hard, to be honest. You could tell by Hedvika's documentary, the climate crisis is something that, unfortunately, the smaller producers have a harder time adapting and mitigating, because you said something important in the last segment that adapting is not enough. And that's completely true. I mean, we have to adapt, but we also have to mitigate at the same time. And if you're a small farmer, you have a very hard time already producing coffee and making a living out of it. Mainly mainly because, well, especially for a small country like Costa Rica, and because our participation in the world market is very, very small. We produce less than 1% of the total output of coffee in the world. And at the same time, we have a very, very, very high production cost. Actually, we are the most expensive country in the region. So that means that we have to compete with other countries that can produce at a fraction of our cost. So Costa Rica's, outview on this whole thing since the decade of the 70s has been to focus on quality and not quantity. So producers are focused on producing quality coffee as opposed to producing volume. But at the same time, we have to also deal with international prices, which fluctuate very, very much. They are very volatile. Right now, we are in good terms with international prices, but most of the time they are way below our production costs. So we have to really do gymnastics and acrobatics to make a profit from our coffee. So in that sense, it's very hard to make a living, and you can add to the equation the hazards of an ever-changing climate. The soil degradation is a really important aspect as well. You need more and more products, fertilizers, more irrigation to produce even less than what you were producing maybe 15, 20 years ago and at a higher cost. So that's like the general view. It's tough for sure. But we're still on it because there's passion in this. There's a great legacy for coffee in Costa Rica, and definitely not giving up anytime soon.
You know, Enrique, since you brought up the fact that it's very expensive to produce coffee in Costa Rica and what it is like to compete on the global market, can you give us a sense of coffee today? Because so much, everything is so globalized now, and so mm-hmm. much is consolidated. When you're talking, especially when you're talking about food. So what is it like with coffee? To think that there are 25 million coffee farmers around the globe, small coffee farmers grow 80% of the world's coffee.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then we were just talking about how, you know, if you go to a coffee shop, you, unless you ask, you have no idea where the coffee's grown. And then I went to the store yesterday to prepare for the show and noticed that most of the space, and this was just a very mainstream store, the space uh-huh. was taken up by Pete's, and then there was Dunkin' Donuts coffee, which I didn't even know they sold coffee in coffee bags.
Yeah, for sure, right?
But can you just explain to us, like, the big corporations versus small, and as someone who drinks coffee, what's the best way to go about making your choices if you care about these issues?
That's a very difficult question. And the reality is that every part of the chain is important, of course, right? You need big players, you need medium players, and you need small players. This is the reality. And if we all work in synergy, then I think we'll all be all right. The thing is that due to economic constraints, of course, and the nature of economics and capitalism, in the end, the smaller fish tend to be eaten by the larger ones, right? And this is just the way that it has been for, well, I don't know, maybe thousands of years, right? So the way that Costa Rica has played this as a small fish is, like I told you, focusing on quality and direct trade and micro farming. There's a novel term right now in the coffee world. Well, it's not novel anymore, but it almost came from Costa Rica, which is called micro beneficio or micro milling. So this was called the micro mill revolution, which happened in the middle of the 2000s. And this was pushed by global coffee prices. Small producers were not able to make a living anymore. So instead of just selling their land, giving up, and I don't know, dedicating to something else, because it's not so easy, right? There aren't many opportunities that you can just go like, okay, I'm just going to sell my farm and dedicate to microchip production, right, in my farm. You don't have that many opportunities, right? So what they came up with, like what we came up with as a country was to develop these small farms into mini industrialists. So like before the year 2005, there were no micro mills in Costa Rica. And by micro mills, I mean coffee mills that mill less than 300 bags of coffee. All of the mills were large mills that were milling hundreds of thousands of bags of coffee. And they were buying the coffee fruit, the coffee cherry from these small growers. They were milling them in their industrial facilities. And then they were placing these coffees in the global market. But in the year 2004, 2005, this revolution happened. And with assistance from the government and cooperation from all the coffee sector in Costa Rica, many small farmers began to have access to money to buy industrial equipment for their farm, and they became their own millers, hence becoming micro millers. So then they were able to mill their own small farm and give a name for themselves in the global market, and to differentiate their coffee, right? So instead of selling their fruit to these large millers, which were just like combining all of the fruit from different farms, each small farmer were actually much better for them, because they were able to properly give their coffee the fame that it deserved. So this was a great thing that happened in Costa Rica, and that has been keeping the small farmer industry sector very much alive. And I think it's widespread right now, at least in Central America region, in Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, also I think Colombia. This phenomenon has been going on as well with micro milling. And so if you're like a more conscious consumer, and if you are more into a niche market as well, then this is the way to go. You want to find coffees that come specifically from a farm in a country, right? That it's developed by a family, that's milled in their own small land. And this coffee, objectively, it tastes way better, right? I mean, at least in the international organoleptic scale, it's a richer coffee for sure. In the end, the consumer has the right to decide which coffee tastes better, right? If it's Dunkin' Donuts, if it's Dunkin' Donuts, Nestle, or whatever, Starbucks, I will not fight with you, right? but definitely this is the way to go for more conscious consumers, to support these small farms that do direct trade with more niche coffees. I'm sure there's tons in San Francisco and California. All the west coast of the United States has an amazing coffee scene for this niche farms. And it's just a matter of going out, looking for it, and supporting the small farmers around the world, especially in Central America.
Yes, definitely. That is Enrique Carvajal Amrain, a coffee producer with the Santa Anita Farm in Costa Rica. That's the world's first farm to be certified as carbon neutral, and we'll ask Enrique about that in a minute. He's a fifth generation of coffee growers. We're also joined today by Hedvika Miknova, a filmmaker and photographer from the Czech Republic. She's the director of It's Bean Too Hot. She traveled to Costa Rica and Tanzania to interview coffee farmers about how they are dealing with climate change. On that question, Hedvika, in terms of a billion coffee drinkers around the world, what did coffee growers tell you about how coffee drinkers can support them and the best way to make choices if we want to support coffee growers who are empowering women and then dealing with the climate crisis?
It was a really difficult question, and it is the question that that was the point of my whole journey. So everyone I met, I asked this. And for example, in Tanzania, a lot of the farmers didn't really know what to tell me. They weren't sure actually how could they get any help, because you know, it's the bigger picture. They are growing the coffee. They are, in a way, the most important part, but there is so much more that happens after that. And the one answer I got a lot is about certifications, which we discussed before, because there are many initiatives that are ensuring that farmers do get paid enough and that ensure that the coffee is grown in a sustainable way. There are also a lot of organizations like HRNS that I work with in Tanzania that do support farmers and do train them to be able to adapt to climate change. But perhaps Enrique can elaborate on that a bit more, like how would he want to be supported? Because I feel like even after all this journey, I did not get a clear answer on what we could actually do to help.
What about that, Enrique? I mean, we just got an email from, we're getting a couple emails from listeners who say that they get their coffee from specific companies that say that they are investing in coffee farming communities around the world. So you really have to do your research to first off find a company that supports these practices, but then make sure that they're being honest with you, right? I mean, what advice would you give to people?
Hedvika said, there's no easy way around this. For example, I can give an example of my own. We actually work with a company that is half based in Costa Rica. I mean, like a third is based in Costa Rica, a third is based in Guatemala, and a third is based in the U.S. But it was born in the U.S. in Atlanta, Georgia, and they are called Thrive Farmers. And Thrive Farmers, their motto or their raison d'être, reason of being, is actually this, to help coffee farmers in Costa Rica and Guatemala directly. And the way they do this is that they give a premium over the coffee they buy from us and other farmers. They give actually a very good premium, way higher than any other company that we've worked with. Mm-hmm. And so I can tell you by my own experience that this company called Thrive Farmers, they do abide by their word of bringing economic sustainability to coffee farmers. And we are actually one of, I think, the largest farm that they buy off in Costa Rica, but they buy off several other small farmers, and we all know each other here in Costa Rica. It's a very tight and small community, and so we have good relationships, and we talk all the time. And so, yeah, it's true. I mean, this company is really doing a very good job in supporting economically, because I mean, in the very end, economics is the backbone of every industry, right? Of every activity. If you don't support economically the activities, they will just dwindle and eventually die. And this is one of the main gaps that I can see. Like I can experience, for example, one of the main divides in the consumer and producer aspect, at least of coffee production, is that the prices don't reflect that sustainability, right? For example, we in Costa Rica are always pushed to produce more sustainable coffee, higher quality coffee every year. We have to compete with everybody else, just like everybody else as well. But in the end, our prices are not that much different. I mean, we do get a little bit different price because it's Costa Rican coffee, it's scarce, it's good quality. But honestly, I don't think it's enough because, I mean, every year after year, there are coffee farmers that are disappearing. And this is mainly just because of the pressure of economics, right? They cannot make a living. There are some that that strive and thrive, but there is a minority that just cannot do it. And so, yeah, I mean, the consumer side of the chain, I think needs more awareness in this sense, and that if you want to keep having a sustainable coffee, a great cup of coffee in your table, well, it just needs to be paid equally, right? You cannot keep on having the prices from 20 years ago in the global markets and expect to be producing in the year 2022 with even higher standards. So
It's such a good point, Enrique, and I'm so glad you mentioned it's thrivefarmers.com. And so, for example, usually when you look at coffee, they tell you the origin, but it's hard to get more information. At least on Thrive Farmers, they tell you about the specific farm, where it is. I'm looking right now at this layover organic decaf. Talk about Byron Corrales from Guatemala. He adds nutrients back to his land by making his own compost and grows the plants to feed his compost. So I think it's just getting the word out about all of this, just to let people know where it is, who are the people. And like you say, to go to the source when you say that they are actually paying a fair price, because it's also so important, right?
It's in the hand of the consumer in the end, you know, like I like to say, we like in democratic countries, we go and vote for a president every 4 years, but we actually vote politically every day of our lives too with our wallets. We decide what to support and what not by deciding what to consume, right?
Exactly. Well, so true. And again, this is a tip from Enrique, who's a coffee farmer and producer in Costa Rica, that Thrive Farmers actually does pay a good wage. And it looks like they're very transparent. We'll actually add a link at yourcallradio.org. Before we end the show, Enrique, you are a producer with the Santa Anita Farm in Costa Rica, fifth generation coffee grower. This is the world's first farm to be certified as carbon neutral. You all have spent some time to get there. It took you 6 years. What does it mean to be carbon neutral, and how has that changed your day-to-day practices?
As you correctly said, it took us 6 years. Lots of hard work, lots of investments as well, new equipments for our industrial facilities. We had to invest hugely in a solar array as well. Even though Costa Rica's energy matrix is one of the cleanest in the world, actually, we also wanted to push that a little like farther and become almost self-sustainable in the energy department. But most of that work came from just educating the community around us, our employees, bringing up the inventories of our farms, because if you have shade-grown coffee, or you keep a set of parcels of your land dedicated to oxygen production, and you make like a proper inventory of these systems, and then you just come up with a number that is a part of the climate equation, right? Or the carbon neutral equation, which is how much greenhouse gases am I emitting and how much am I capturing, right? So, arithmetically, it's quite simple, but to get to that number, it's quite complex. And by the time we started to investigate this, which was in late 2009, early 2010s, nobody knew much about this. Even to this date, I think it's a rather obscure subject, even though it shouldn't be, right? After 6 years of working with the Ministry of Energy and Environment here in Costa Rica, we became like a pilot farm for this project. We came to the conclusion with lots of engineers and our own work that we were actually carbon neutral, actually carbon negative, but we didn't want to use the label then, not even now, because if carbon neutral is obscure, I don't want to imagine what people would start to think about carbon negativity. But it was lots of hard work, trial and error, and lots of economic investment as well, in the meal and in the energy department, less water usage. We had to delve deep into microorganism production to reduce fertilizer usage. So every aspect of your corporate culture has to change as well, recycling your offices, et cetera, right? All the things that pop into your mind as being green or carbon neutral have to be done. And after 6 years, we presented this document, like almost like a 100-page document, to the Ministry of Energy and Environment, and they sealed it, they revised it, they said, yeah, we're good to go. And we were the first, officially the first coffee farm to be carbon neutral in the world. And the second one to achieve this certification is Costa Rican as well. So what we like to think of this is this is not so much as an achievement for ourselves, but more as a manner
of inspiring others to follow up, right? Because we are less than a drop in the ocean, and the change can only happen if the whole of the ocean works together. So this is the main goal.
Mm. Well, huge congratulations on your successes. To think that investing in solar panels has provided 90% of electrical consumption of your mill is pretty incredible. So congratulations on that. And Henvika, final thoughts before we end. We have about a minute left. After doing all of this research, how do you think differently now about coffee?
It's completely different. I think about it every time I have a cup of coffee. And it's also, you know, what kind of bag of coffee do you buy? When I came back from Costa Rica, I really like to buy coffee that came from there because I visited those farms. I knew what they looked like. I sometimes knew the people, which was amazing. But it definitely makes me think every single day about who grew this, how are they doing?
Well, and you can learn more about the farmers, the work they're doing, how they are dealing with climate change. Hedvika Miknova is director of It's Been Too Hot, a documentary that explores these issues. Find more information at yourcallradio.org. Hedvika, thank you so much for joining us, and thanks for this great documentary.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Enrique Carvajal Amrin is a coffee producer with the Santa Anita Farm in Costa Rica, the world's first farm to be certified as carbon neutral. And we will link to their coffee and where you can find it at yourcallradio.org. Enrique, thank you for your important work and thank you for joining us.
It's been a huge pleasure. Shout out to the wonderful people of San Francisco and the entire world. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. We'll be right back.